Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, conserving the past to inspire future generations of dreamers and preserving the legacy of Julia Morgan. To learn more about how to become a member and experience authentically curated historical events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean. These experiences are unparalleled in their historical accuracy and grandeur, and you too can savor the experience by becoming a supporting member of the Foundation at Hearst Castle. To learn more, log on to foundationathearstcastle.com. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me at the Chabot Space and Science Center, tucked in a redwood forest, just minutes from downtown Oakland, California. We'll join Executive Director Adam Tobin as he takes us on a tour where he shares insights about the center's partnership with NASA and its ongoing programs specifically tailored for school groups and families. We'll also visit with astronomer Gerald McKeegan at the Chabot Observatory Complex.
My name is Adam Tobin. I'm the executive director at the Chabot Space and Science Center.
Here we are, grand entry, foyer.
Yeah, so here we are at the entrance to the experience. One of the things that we're most proud of are the ways in which we evolved the experience during the pandemic. We were shut down for 20 months, which was a really long time. The only potential silver lining you might find in this crisis is deepening some of the institutional transformation that was already underway, creating new experiences, and of course, building upon our new partnership with NASA. So our entryway, we redesigned to be welcoming, to be a little more open. So this whole area, before we reopened, was refurbished, redesigned, and we wanted folks to feel a sense of inclusion and community the minute they walk into our science center. So here's the welcome wall that we put in. We have, right when you walk in, one of the most exciting but subtle things here is kid-created art. So those exoplanets that you see when you walk in, an exoplanet is a planet that orbits another star, and as I'm sure you know, we didn't know of any of them not too long ago, and now we know of thousands of them, and soon we believe to know of millions, if not billions of them.
Back up for a moment. The why and how you came into the partnership with NASA, was it so that they would have a public-facing place to showcase?
Yeah, so Chabot has had a partnership with NASA, NASA Ames, for many years. And over the last 5 or 6 years, we started working with them a lot more. The goals of the partnership really were shared and emergent. And the first, of course, was an opportunity to create a visitor center for NASA Ames right here in Oakland and the East Bay. And partnering with the Science Center meant that there was the benefit of our background, engagement with our communities. For us, we got really excited about the idea that, yes, there will be cool artifacts, and yes, there'll be cool exhibits, but NASA Ames is so much about the people and the research that we wanted to make sure that the people were visible here.
And how do you do that?
So there's engagement in the creation of the exhibits, there's speaker series, there's presence at our festivals and major astronomical events, and that's just kind of scratching the surface. We have some broader ideas about how scientists might even be able to engage our communities and our visitors in their very work. So that's the visitor center. Then there was a second part to the partnership, which was our Learning Everywhere initiative, which is an opportunity to work with NASA to help provide learning experiences across Oakland and the East Bay, so beyond our four walls.
Give us a tangible example of...
One tangible example was actually these exoplanets were created in fifth and sixth grade classrooms in OUSD before they were displayed here.
Oh, cool.
We also do work with community-based organizations across Oakland where we'll do after-school workshops, we'll do festivals, and that's just a way of ensuring that everyone has access to what we do. And getting the kids where they are and learning does happen everywhere. And the third, which is really exciting, is an intersection of our youth development programs. We have middle school and high school programs, Galaxy Explorers and Champions of Science, that we've run for many years. Imagine those kids and kids within Oakland and beyond having pathways into internships and jobs at NASA. So there's the visitor center, there's our work beyond our four walls, and then there's this tangible opportunity for STEM workforce development and pathways for our kids into careers in the sciences.
How far is your reach of school districts?
Districts from all over the Bay Area come here. Even some schools in the Central Valley come here. Our primary catchment would be Oakland and the East Bay. But given the fact that we have this focus on space and astronomy, we draw folks from far and wide.
I think Santa Clara Valley would be right.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a little walking tour.
Absolutely.
So now we're leaving the foyer entry area.
So Chabot is really special in that we have really interesting variety of learning spaces. Yes, there's your gallery spaces that you would expect in a museum like this, but we're also rich in studios and labs. So we have this ability to do workshops with school groups. We have the ability to have deep dive hands-on learning experiences for our visitors that are really fun. So as we go into what we call Lab One, this is an exoplanet workshop. So visitors get to come into this laboratory and create their own exoplanets. So they start with a ball, a sphere, and they start with their imagination. So science and art and imagination all go together. And imagine before you learn the science of exoplanets, you say, what kind of planet might exist that I would find interesting? What would be incredibly creative? What would be imaginative? And kids start with that. And they say, this is a big planet. This is a small planet. These are the kind of creatures on the planet. This is the kind of atmosphere. This is the color. And then you can look at the science and say, well, in order for that planet to exist, these are the conditions, this is the physics, this is the astronomy. So it's both a creative toehold, imagination, and then the discovery of exoplanets and the science behind it is one of the most exciting and compelling areas of discovery for humanity right now. Ultimately leading to questions of, are we alone in the universe or where else could we live?
In a typical age group that would be in this lab?
I would say the typical age group in this lab would be in the elementary.
Like the sixth grade?
Yeah, K to five. Mm-hmm. But we've also seen, and this is one of the most exciting aspects of our floor experience, is we'll see families in here working together. So the adults will be right there with the kids working on their exoplanets as they are in many of the experiences we have here.
You have to sign up ahead of time?
No, you don't. This is open for general museum audiences. You know, if you come up here to see the museum, this is but one of the experiences that you can have. Chabot started in 1883, which makes it 139 years old.
And how did it start and why?
So Chabot started with the donation of a telescope, an 8-inch refracting telescope from Anthony Chabot, who was a local philanthropist. And he donated it to the Oakland Unified School District, who then partnered with the city of Oakland. And the first Chabot Observatory was created in downtown Oakland in 1883. What's really interesting about that is, although this location is relatively new, we've only been here for 22 years, we have that long history, the deep roots within the community, and interestingly, it makes Chabot quietly one of the oldest informal science learning institutions in the country.
Oh, wow.
So it's a really special place. It's a real jewel in Oakland that a lot of folks may not know about.
So right now, we're in front of NASA spacesuits.
Yeah.
This is really cool.
So it doesn't get much cooler than this. Yeah. This is the home of the NASA experience. This is the heart of the NASA Visitor Center here at Chabot. We just opened this in November, and it was designed to be this ever-evolving space, and it's already proven to be so. So in here, you will find astronaut suits from various missions, a number of which have actually flown. And that's just always cool for a kid. And one of the most exciting things for us is we will have little kids come in here and they're wearing their astronaut suits and their helmets. It's the cutest thing ever. Their eyes are already just open with the possibilities of the universe. Then they come up and they see these. And if possible, their eyes get even bigger. It's just really cool. In addition to these, then we have a bunch of artifacts that are specific to NASA Ames, which is a research center. And they're doing some really interesting work. And there are all these creative artifacts that come out of it. A concrete example is Astrobee. So Astrobee is a rover that is designed for the International Space Station. And so there's different versions of Astrobee. They have a bunch of bees. There's a killer bee. There's Astrobee. And one of the most fascinating things about this, on top of the fact that we have one here in our museum for folks to see as part of the visitor center, is we believe in creating experiences that allow our visitors to get a little closer to what the actual research and phenomena is behind the Ames research. So, concrete example, NASA Ames has to test Astrobee on Earth for a microgravity environment. How do you test something in a gravity environment, right, 1G, that would work in microgravity? Well, the way they do that is they have a big metal table with a bunch of holes in the table through which air blows up so it can glide across the surface. Well, that's an awful lot like an air hockey table, we thought. So we created an Astrobee air hockey exhibit, which is as much an activity as it is an exhibit, where kids get to play with motors and materials and fan blades and try and create a rover that will glide across an air hockey table. And while that is fun and playful and engaging for our visitors, and they love it, they'll stay in this gallery for hours playing with these things. They're actually engaging in real research. That's exactly what the world's top scientists and researchers at Ames did. So you could say they're playing like the researchers. You could also say the researchers are playing like kids, and they're both true.
What do we have here?
So this is an artifact wall, and this was designed to have a constantly rotating suite of artifacts from NASA Ames. And they can range from materials that were tested in their ArcJet complex, where they were subjected to extraordinary heat, and that's how you would, for example, test a heat shield on a returning spaceship, to an anti-static shirt that you have to wear in the lab so you can have a perfectly safe environment while you're playing with materials. So it's all of the little bits and pieces that give you a deeper insight into how they actually do their work.
Are these mostly reproductions, or some of them are actual?
The majority are real. Some are models, some are real. It depends. But this, for example, is a model of Laddie, which was orbiting the moon. And then behind us, of course, this right here, we're really excited about. This is the world's first scale model of the Viper rover. And what's really exciting about Viper is this is the rover that will go up as part of the Artemis mission when we return to the moon, which is also doubly cool because it'll be the first time a woman sets foot on the moon as part of the Artemis mission. The Viper will be on the pole of the moon looking for water.
Oh, wow.
Now, how cool is that? So if there is water there, or water as we expect, think of the implications for our existence on the moon. Building a base there, long-term habitation, refueling, breaking it down into hydrogen and oxygen, so you've got water and you've got fuel. You know, when I look at this, A, it's really cool that we're going to go find water on the moon. B, it demonstrates what we're excited about, and I think a lot of folks would be excited about if they had an opportunity to be closer to it. The current space exploration renaissance is extraordinary. You know, for those who watched Apollo in the 60s, right, you got to see, okay, there's a launch every so often. Now, it is happening constantly. The pace of discovery is exponentially increasing. The players and actors in space exploration are exponentially increasing. The largest wind tunnel in the world. This is a blade from it, just to give you a sense of the size.
That's the one that was at NASA Ames?
Yeah. So this is one blade from one fan out of those six. And to give a sense of how big that really is, this is a room where they are testing the aerodynamics of the space shuttle, for example. Very large wind tunnel. And once again, if you come here as a visitor, we've created our own wind tunnel exhibit where kids get to create anything from paper airplanes to other objects, and they get to test how they fly in a wind tunnel. And we also have, this is in the works right now, we have a rover creation activity, and we've created a roverscape outside where kids can create their own rovers and then go out and play with them and take on challenges, design challenges, engineering challenges. So this is an activity that's continuing to evolve. And I think one of the most exciting things about the space is the way in which a visitor comes here, they will expect something new from NASA pretty much every visit.
Over here, what's this?
Very fine powder on the surface of the moon. And so just like at NASA Ames, where they have a regolith test bed where they can test the effects of heat and light on the topography of the moon, we've done the same thing here. So we filled up this very large sandbox with a regolith material, and you can see how it blocks or absorbs heat, right? So imagine if you're on the pole of the moon, you could be in one of the coldest places in the solar system. And if you're exposed to the sun, you could be in one of the hottest. So that is all present. So how do scientists know which is which, and how do they account for the topography of the moon? This allows kids to play with the same kind of phenomena that you would at NASA Ames. Go outside. We have this extraordinary group of volunteers, many of them scientists and engineers in their own right. We have our high schoolers and our youth development program. Our staff are all out on the floor. So it's a very active, high human touch experience, which not all museums can do. So that's one of the special aspects of what we do here, is we don't focus solely on the object. It's the interaction, and often as much as we can, between people.
Talk to us about the physical plant. I mean, here's a whole nother wing. What takes place over there?
Yeah, so Chabot's campus is really extraordinary. We're quite lucky to have the building we do and the location we do. So this is an over 80,000 square foot facility with two buildings connected by the sky bridge on a 13 plus acre campus nestled in the Redwoods, right? So this is all public land all around us. And so this intersection of the space and astronomy and the natural environment and environmental science, and those two are obviously related, right, is really special. So we think of this very much as a campus, and we try and create experiences where when you come up to visit us, you know, you stay here for a while, right? There's enough to see, enough to experience, and we encourage people when they come up here, experience Chabot, take a hike in the Redwoods. Some of the most beautiful hiking trails around are right there.
So they're formal trails.
Miles and miles and miles of trails. My personal favorite is the French Trail. I will recommend that. Great Redwoods.
Very cool. And how far to get down to the heart of Oakland?
We're very close to the heart of Oakland. So, you know, driving 15 minutes, thereabouts.
To learn more about your world, website?
We have a website. It's chabotspace.org. We try and put up all kinds of interesting content, current space events, and there you can see about all the goings on at the center. And my name is Adam Tobin.
Adam, thank you so much.
I'm Gerald McKeegan. I'm an astronomer here at the Chabot Space and Science Center.
Where are we right now?
We are inside the observatory that houses our oldest telescope. This is the original Oakland Observatory Telescope. It was built in 1883 by Alvin Clark and Sons. And they were a premier telescope-making company in the late 19th century.
In America?
In America, yes. Actually, they built telescopes for other countries as well, but primarily in America. This is an 8-inch refracting telescope, so it has an 8-inch lens at the front end, and then it's just a long hollow tube to the back end where the eyepiece is. This telescope was originally in a small observatory in downtown Oakland. It was built for the Oakland School Board with money donated by Anthony Chabot. Anthony Chabot was a water engineer who developed the original water system that serviced the Bay Area back in the late 19th century. Anthony Chabot had two stipulations when he donated the money. One was that the telescope would always be available for public viewing for free, and the other was that they not name the observatory after him. So for the first few years, it was called the Oakland Observatory. When he passed away, it was end of the 1880s, they changed the name to Chabot. You notice the short telescope up on the top, that's actually a camera. Back in the day when they wanted to take photographs, they didn't have film and certainly didn't have digital cameras. What they had was glass plates that had an emulsion on them. And if you look at the back end of that short tube there, you see the square frame. That's where the glass plate would go. They would point the telescope out the object that they wanted to look at, and then they would just pull on this knob and open the shutter. And you see how the front end opens up. just like a camera would. They would expose sometimes for an hour or more, tracking the object as they're exposing. And that's how they took very early astrophotography. So we don't use it today anymore, but it is a nice way of seeing how that was done. You see some scales on the telescope. These are for positioning the telescope. So we have a coordinate system on the sky that's similar to the GPS coordinate system. When we want to point the telescope at an object, we just look up the coordinates of that object and then dial it in here. This was our second telescope. This is the one we call Rachel. Rachel was built in 1915 at a time when Chabot moved from the location in downtown Oakland to a more remote site about 5 miles south of here. Rachel is a 20-inch refractor, so the lens up at the front of the telescope is 20 inches in diameter, and it's a long hollow tube to the back end where the eyepiece is. Rachel is just a lot more telescope. So this is our newest telescope. This is the one we call NELLY. NELLY is a 36-inch reflecting telescope, and immediately you notice that it's much shorter than the other telescopes, and it's much wider. Reflecting telescopes use a different technology to create the image at the back end. Instead of using lenses, they use mirrors. It has a slightly curved surface so that when light hits it, it bounces off as a cone of light. That cone of light hits a small mirror at the front of the telescope, bounces off of it, back down to the eyepiece. So the path of light inside the telescope is actually folded, which makes it a much shorter telescope. In fact, it's physically the shortest of our three telescopes.
When was it built?
It was built in 2003. It's only 19 years old. It is by far our most modern telescope. The other two telescopes that we saw, when we want to point it at an object, we have to push it around manually. With this telescope, it's all computer controlled. When we want to point it to an object, we just go to the computer, tell it where we want to look, and it does all the work for us. We're also in a different style of observatory building. We're not in a dome. We're in what's called a rollback roof observatory. You see rails here and here. The roof rides on those rails. There is a frame behind the building. When we want to observe, we roll the roof all the way off. We're totally exposed to the sky. Every Friday and Saturday night, we also sometimes bring school groups and scout groups and things like that up here. This telescope is also used for a research project. This telescope is part of a global network of observatories that search for and track near-Earth asteroids.
Mostly volunteer?
Yes, all of the telescope operators are volunteers. Most of them have some sort of astronomy experience. They're amateur astronomers, or they worked in some field of science.
Thank you. Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, conserving the past to inspire future generations of dreamers and preserving the legacy of Julia Morgan. To learn more about how to become a member and experience authentically curated historical events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean. These experiences are unparalleled in their historical accuracy and grandeur. And you too can savor the experience by becoming a supporting member of the Foundation at Hearst Castle. To learn more, log on to foundation@hearstcastle.com.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.